that we have to speak out.
Vice President Kamala Harris speaking out in Dubai about climate change.
This is a pivotal moment. Our action collectively, or worse, our inaction, will impact billions of people for decades to come.
Some 150 world leaders are attending the COP28 climate summit. It's called an atmospheric river, and it certainly doesn't sound good.
Stronger to severe thunderstorms as we go throughout the day, lower Mississippi Valley, some of this causing flooding. We also have flood watches in effect for portions of Louisiana on over towards the panhandle of Florida.
That's the Weather Channel meteorologist Kelly Cass with that report. CBS News Brief, I'm Linda Kenyon.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Friday was World AIDS Day. A woman whose son became the public face of the disease is reminding people to never forget the victims lost and the effort to find a cure. Here's Joe Ullery.
More than 40 million people have died from AIDS, including Ryan White, who grew up at a time when not much was known about it and medicine offered few treatments. Ryan contracted the disease during a blood transfusion at age 13. He became a staunch advocate against discrimination and helped change how Americans view AIDS. Jeannie White-Ginder says it's imperative to remember all the lost lives.
That is so important that we remember all the people who got us to where we are today, because they are no longer here. And I'm not just talking about Ryan, because Ryan was a face, but there are so many people that did all the work.
Just 5 weeks after Ryan's death in 1990, Congress overwhelmingly passed the Ryan White Care Act with bipartisan support. The legislation helps more people get tested for HIV and offers assistance to patients in all stages of the disease. Ryan's mom says AIDS affects people across the spectrum regardless of labels.
A gay person has it, a straight person has it, a blood transfusion person has it. It was for everybody. Once you have AIDS, you're just like everybody else who has AIDS. You're fighting to stay alive. And people fought to stay alive, and people dedicated their lives to get us to where we are today.
She says Ryan would have turned 52 next week. His mom plans to travel to Indiana University on his birthday, where the Rural Center for AIDS STD Prevention will present the Ryan White Distinguished Leadership Award to Dr. Joe and Sarah Ellen Mamlin. I'm Joe Ullery. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio. Keep up on the day's news talk and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. 37 this afternoon, under cloudy skies, east winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Snow showers likely tonight, 29. 36 tomorrow, mixed precipitation likely. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 28.
Why do we have celery? What else can you do with a Dutch oven? Where did the word kitchen even come from? The Kitchen's Open answers these kinds of questions and includes fun history facts around our favorite foods, meals, and family cuisine traditions. Our WFHR team will entertain you each week on Mondays during the 9 o'clock hour on WFHR's morning show with The Kitchen's Open.
An issue for farmers and policymakers. She says taxpayer dollars come into play when these programs are underfunded.
Some of the costs that they pay because of the lack of investment in soil health practices, especially municipalities, rural communities, even state budgets, when they're looking at costs to repair flooding damages.
Between 2009 and 2019, Wisconsin suffered nearly $36 million in flood damage. On the flip side, she says soil health investment and improved water quality pay off for communities, such as boosting home values along watersheds. These discussions also follow recent conservation funding boosts from the Inflation Reduction Act, with advocates noting they're poised to help more rural areas. South Central Wisconsin farmer Ron Shep is among those who have tapped into IRA incentives this year through the Federal Conservation Stewardship Program, providing benefits that reach beyond his property.
We farm right on Lake Wisconsin, and so there's less runoff, and so that definitely helps the neighbors by keeping a cleaner Lake Wisconsin.
He also contends that making these incentives more accessible could place less stress on disaster aid programs for farmers. Congress has until next fall to adopt a new farm bill after extending the recent version for another year. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
More news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Here's your Mad Radio forecast. 38 this afternoon, under cloudy skies, east winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy tonight, mixed precipitation likely, 31. Mixed precipitation likely tomorrow, high of 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
Broadcasting from Civic Media Global Headquarters on State Street, this is Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. UK.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your girl, Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel. This is our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you for joining me and my wonderful producer, Greg, here in the studios of the Civic Media outlets throughout the state of Wisconsin. Thank you for spending some time with us in this, our second hour of the broadcast, talking as we always do about the aspiration for justice in America, law, government, issues and animating our lives, our livelihoods, and speaking this morning about some updates coming out of our federal courts, our state courts as well, having to do with the major pieces of litigation pending in those courts. Right before the top of the hour break, talking about a major decision issued by Judge Tanya Chutkan. She is a federal district court judge in the District of Columbia. She is presiding over what will be a trial in March of next year. That's when she is scheduled the trial of this very, very important major indictment charging Donald Trump with four different counts of election interference, that being prosecuted by the U.S. Department of Justice and Jack Smith, who, of course, is the special counsel there. She has before her this request by the defense to dismiss the case based upon the notion, the doctrine, the argument that Donald Trump, by virtue of his status as the president, was immune from any sort of criminal prosecution like this. Judge Tanya Chutkan, just this past week, recognizing that she is obliged to respond in these pretrial periods to those kinds of motions, basically saying these arguments are not valid at all, rejecting those, saying that indeed he is not immune from criminal prosecution. Along the way, saying some very important things about the rule of law generally when it comes to any president, any person in the federal district court. In a ruling, Judge Chutkan said that the office of the presidency does not confer a lifelong, as she described it, get out of jail free pass. That's what she writes in her omnibus order, dismissing this notion that there is immunity that attaches to the former president. She said former presidents enjoy no special conditions on their federal criminal liability. This defendant may be subject to federal investigation, indictment, prosecution, conviction, and punishment for any criminal acts undertaken while in office. And she's probably referencing there the notion that, again, there is this internal memorandum inside the Department of Justice that says when there is a sitting president that person, whoever that person may be, not subject as a policy matter, not a legislative matter, not a judicial finding, that indeed, there should be some consideration for the presidency during the time in office. But she's saying that this defendant can, in fact, be subject to criminal prosecution for the things that he did when he's out of office now. That's Tanya Chutkan's great statement about the rule of law just this past week. She also rejected Trump's claims that this indictment somehow violates his his rights under the Constitution generally, his free speech rights, his First Amendment rights, obviously especially important at a time when he is out there campaigning for the presidency. We know that with respect to that matter, the case that is the challenge to her imposition of a so-called gag order, restrictive order, that's pending before the D.C. Court of Appeals, just like the case involving the New York judge, Judge Engoron, actually referred to as Justice Engoron. He presides in the Superior Court there. That's the way they describe them in New York. That particular case has its parallel in the federal system. Judge Chutkan's similar order directing that this defendant not, in fact, engage in the kinds of incendiary statements that he has made in the past. That's also pending right now before the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, the federal court. And it sounded from the oral argument of a couple of weeks ago that the Court of Appeals is probably going to affirm that lower court order, but also saying along the way that there may be some accommodations that can be made under the First Amendment that do not implicate and do not affect the conduct of the trial before Judge Chutkan. The court in Judge Chutkan's ruling on the immunity issue, this major petition for dismissal, also said it is well established that the First Amendment does not protect speech that is used as an instrument of crime. That's what she said just this past week. Defendant is not being prosecuted simply for making false statements, but rather for knowingly making false statements in furtherance of a criminal conspiracy and obstructing the electoral process. That's what Judge Chutkan wrote in dismissing this notion that the case should be dismissed based upon immunity principles. All of this happening at the same time that the D.C. Court of Appeals, same venue, different court, higher court, addressed also in an order just issued yesterday a somewhat similar situation, a somewhat similar set of doctrines about whether or not there is immunity, this one having to do with some civil lawsuits have been brought by House Democrats in the House of Representatives, and some officers who were involved in trying to protect our Capitol on January 6th. And in particular, they allege that they were injured in that riot. They have brought a civil lawsuit in federal court, as have others in the federal court, alleging that Donald Trump is responsible for the injuries that they suffered, both as members of Congress and these particular officers as well, and that his conduct is directly attributable to the kinds of injuries that they suffered, that he should be held, according to the complaint, the civil complaint in those cases, accountable for his conduct in inciting the riot that caused this disruption. More than 2 years later, these cases continue to percolate up and around. And as a result of that, the appeals court addressing whether or not those civil cases should be permitted to go ahead, be tried in a district court, the district court in District of Columbia, just yesterday issued a major order. This, again, the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, basically knocking down Donald Trump's very sweeping claims that presidential immunity, again, the same concept in this civil environment, somehow shields him from liability in these civil lawsuits brought by the lawmakers, the legislators, the Democrats in Congress, and also these police officers. The three-judge panel that made this decision, again, permitting the lawsuit to go ahead, also said that he can continue to fight in this trial. He can continue to present evidence, doesn't shut him down entirely. But just that the notion of immunity, at least at this stage in the proceedings, is not a bar to the case going ahead. Trump had said that he can't be sued over his role, whatever that may have been in the riot, because of these are matters of public concern, that, again, he is immune from this kind of prosecution, and that he has absolute presidential immunity. The Court of Appeals, like Judge Tanya Chutkan, the lower court in the criminal case, just yesterday finding just the opposite, rejecting what Donald Trump and his lawyers have said and telling him that, indeed, the case will go ahead. The principal judge of the three-judge panel wrote this. He said, he is acting as an office seeker, not an office holder, no less than are the persons running against him when they take precisely the same actions in their competing campaigns to attain precisely the same office. In other words, he is serving in a campaign role there, not doing anything in the scope of his actual duties and responsibilities. And for that reason, immunity does not attach. Some major cases coming out of state and federal district and appeals courts just in recent days affecting the future of those prosecutions and permitting them to go ahead and affirming them, at least as to the federal case in front of Judge Chutkan, this fundamental notion, and also the civil case, that the immunity doctrine that does apply in some instances does not apply here when the defendant is not acting in the scope of his official duties and responsibilities, but serving simply as a campaign advocate for his own candidacy for the presidency. An important concept. No one is above the law. That's what the courts are saying. We always appreciate your calls, your comments, and indeed, we've got a caller this morning. Dana from La Crosse, appreciate your calling in this morning to be a part of our discussion. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. It's been a while.
Glad to have you with us, Dana, yeah, right?
You betcha. Rest assured, I'm still listening every weekend.
Wonderful.
It's just a great show. I think the time slot you have here, this is definitely the best thing available on any airwaves. And I hope you're getting more and more listeners to discover you every weekend.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Spread the word. We always appreciate also your calling in and with comments and questions.
You betcha. I'd like to visit the gag order issue. So we all know what he's up to with all his tweets and his attacks on basically anybody involved with any of these trials, and then down to their wives and everything. It's just incredible. And then whining about, and he's got his surrogates doing the same, about how he's being persecuted and not being allowed to, you know, discuss the trials and everything, to defend himself publicly. When we all know, you know, those of us that aren't enamored with his dazzling personality, we all know that he's been given more leeway than anybody in this country would ever be given, and definitely a two-tiered system there, but not in the way they want to define it. What I am wondering, Jim, is a possible scenario that I think could happen. And let's say the trial doesn't end up the way we are all hoping and thinking it definitely should. And it is found that he did have an effect